It was the middle of the night when the phone rang. 4:10 by the clock radio, Dave jerked up before the first ring ended, his eyes closed, his heart pounding, struggling for the phone on the bedside table, overshooting and knocking his reading lamp onto the floor. Morally now awake and propped on an elbow, and Dave speaking into the phone as if everything was okay, as if all he had been doing at 4 a.m. was sitting around waiting for someone to call. "Hi," he chirped cheerfully. And there was no one there, just the unmistakable hiss of a long-distance line. "Hello," said Dave, quieter, his heart sinking. Something horrible, he thought, had happened in Cape Breton. Someone was calling from Cape Breton with horrible news about his mother. Dave said Morley, reaching out, and then there was a voice on the phone, a voice with a thick British accent, and it was saying, "Hello, hello, is anyone there? Hello, I'm coming to town in 3 weeks. Hello, I was hoping I could stay with you. Hello." Hello, said Dave. "I'm terribly sorry," said the voice, "but I can't hear a blessed word you're saying." Dave said, "Who is this?" And the voice, which was a woman's voice, said, "I said I can't hear a blessed word." And the line went dead. Dave hung up and he looked at Morley and he said, I think Cousin Dorothy's coming to visit. Cousin Dorothy from the village of Hawkhurst, South Kent, England. Dorothy who shouts instead of speaks, overweight and overbearing Dorothy. Dorothy, who works for local government, she has a desk on the second floor of the Hawkhurst post office where she fields complaints from irate hikers about farmers who have let their crops overgrow the public footpaths. When a complaint lands on Dorothy's desk, she marches off to the offending field and Lord pity the farmer who gets in her way. "I sue farmers," says Dorothy. "I'm a right bitch." Dorothy's never had to do that because Dorothy's farmers are afraid of her. Early in Dorothy's tenure as the warden of South Kent, a farmer pastured his bull in an effort to discourage hikers from crossing his fields. Dorothy showed up after a few days, struggled over the stile, marched up to the bull in her wellies, and clubbed it between the eyes with a cricket bat. The bull sank to its knees, and Dorothy stood in the field beside it, whacking it whenever it tried to stand up. And she stayed there until a stunned farmer appeared. He looked at Dorothy and then at his cowering bull, and he said, "What's this then?" And Dorothy told him he had 15 minutes to get the bull back in the barn or she'd start clubbing him. In a farm community, word of that sort of thing tends to get around rather quickly. Dorothy, who never married and lives in a flat beside the butcher's with her two corgis, Elizabeth and Philip. A fierce person for whom the winds of passion eternally blow. "I can't imagine," said Dave after her call, "why she'd be coming." She arrived 3 weeks later on the 4th of August this summer on a charter flight that landed at 4:30 in the morning. Dave was at the airport to pick her up. Cousin Dorothy, now 57, tweed jacket, ivory blouse, wool skirt, sensible shoes, and wearing a pair of Mountie earrings. Coming to Canada to attend a convention, a worldwide get-together for fans of the Canadian television show Due South. "I didn't know they got that in Britain," said Dave. Registrations for the 4-day Friends of Due South convention began that morning at 10:30. "Want to go shopping first," said Dorothy, who, unlike Dave, didn't seem any worse the wear for the overnight flight. "I want to get one of those hats the Canadian snowboarders wore at the Olympics," she said. Dave drove Dorothy to a department store not far from the Hotel de Cheval Mort. "I'll wait here," he said. You take your time. "What do you think?" she asked as she settled into the car 20 minutes later. The Canadian Olympic team hat was pulled tightly onto her head. There was a bulge of red skin, like the rim of a teacup, peering from under the hat and running across her forehead. "You look great," said Dave. Dorothy was scowling into the mirror, shaking her head. "I never look good in hats." She was alternatively fiddling with the angle of the hat and the angle of the mirror, but she said those snowboarders sure were drop-dead gorgeous. Dave tried to show her around town. He tried a museum of Canadian art. He suggested a historical tour. She wasn't the least bit interested. Every night she had things to show them at dinner, more photos, souvenirs, stories of her fellow conventioneers. "I met a girl from the Philippines," she said. She was spooning a mound of mashed potatoes onto her plate, using her fork to wedge a piece of butter the size of a cookie right into the mashed potatoes. Sam, sitting at the table, watching her in awe as she turned the potatoes into something that looked more like pudding than potato. "Her mother's dying of cancer," she said. She was eating and talking, loading her fork with potatoes and meat and waving it in the air and then popping it in her mouth during the pauses where she might otherwise have breathed. "It's funny," she said. "You know, I've watched some of those television programs 15 times. I have them on tape. And you get to know the dialogue. There's a show where Benny, he's the Mountie, when Benny is shot in the leg. And at the end, his friend Ray is teasing him, and Benny says, 'That's not amusing, Ray.' And after she told me about her mother, I looked at the girl from the Philippines and I said, 'That's not amusing, Ray.' And we both started to laugh, and then we started to cry. It was very odd, but it was very nice, too. I felt like I'd known her for ever so long." That was the last day of the convention. The next night at supper, Dorothy had nothing to tell them. She seemed lost. As they were eating dessert, she suddenly said, "I had to sell jewelry to get here." And they all stopped eating. I sold a diamond ring and 2 gold bracelets," she said. "They were my grandmother's." No one said anything. But she didn't look at all embarrassed. "I'm not much for jewelry," she said. "I kept it in a box at the top of my cupboard. I never wore any of it. I hadn't looked at it for years. So when I heard about the convention, I thought, I'm going to turn those things into money." She had a week left before she had to go home. Dave asked what she wanted to do. "Niagara Falls," he said. She shook her head, "No." And then she said, "I want to see a real Mountie." And Dave assumed a real Mountie meant a Mountie in red, and the only place that Dave could think to see a Mountie in full dress uniform was Parliament Hill. They left on Saturday afternoon, so late that Dave gave up on the idea of getting there before dark. They checked into a set of cabins on the lower Rideau Lake. "If we get an early start," said Dave, for the second day in a row. "We can still have a full day in Ottawa." The cabins were built in the 30s. White clapboard with a small screen porch built in a semicircle around a stand of pines. Dave bought 3 beers from the woman in the office where he registered, and they ordered pizza for dinner. There was an above-ground swimming pool, and before dinner he dragged 3 wooden Adirondack chairs over to the pool, and they sat there, Morley, Dorothy, and Dave, and they drank their beers while the kids swam. They ate their pizza outside, and they watched a rusty pickup truck with a dumpy camper on the back bounce up to the cabin beside Dorothy's. The driver jockeyed the truck around the pines. He was pulling a boat in a trailer, a large cruiser. And when he parked the truck, he climbed out of his cab and he stretched. He was wearing a plaid work shirt and blue jeans, jeans so dusty that they were turning brown. And although he hadn't shaved for a few days, you could see his cheeks were sunburnt, weathered, and he smiled pleasantly at them, and he said bonjour as he walked by them on his way to the motel office. If it wasn't for the mosquitoes, it would have been perfect. The mosquitoes had come when they were eating the pizza. "This is Canada," said Dave to Dorothy as he slapped at his neck. "Now you know what we're all about." Dorothy had a cabin all to herself, and she lay on her bed and she stared at the water stains on the unpainted wooden ceiling. There was a rip in the screen in her bedroom window, and her cabin was full of mosquitoes. She'd never heard anything like it in her life. The drilling buzz of the bugs as they dove around her head. At midnight, she got out of bed and she put on the red Mountie Long Johns that she had bought at the convention. And she stuck her head under the pillow, but the mosquitoes wouldn't leave her alone. And she slapped at the bugs, and then in an effort to escape them, she began to walk around, trailing her hand against the things she passed, the picnic table, the Adirondack chairs, the wall of her cabin, the boat on the trailer in front of the cabin next to hers. She walked around the boat 3 times, moving faster and faster to stay ahead of the bugs, marching almost, singing, waltzing Matilda, of all things. She had to keep moving or the bugs were going to drive her crazy. It was on her 3rd time around the boat that she noticed the ladder hanging over the stern. She looked at the ladder and she did something completely unexpected. She climbed the 4 rungs and she struggled over the transom onto the deck. And she saw a door and 3 steps leading down into a cabin, and she didn't feel like she was doing anything wrong. Didn't feel to her like she was trespassing when she opened the door and ducked down the steps and went into the small cabin. And when the door closed behind her, there were no bugs for the first time in hours. She breathed a heavy sigh of relief and she sat down on the bench, and the next thing Dorothy knew, she was dreaming of the ocean, dreaming of the gently rocking sea. She was happy and she was sailing home on a rolling sea, although it seemed to be getting rougher, as if maybe there was a storm. And she should do something about that. Shouldn't she batten down the hatches? Wasn't that what you did when you struck weather at sea? Which is when she woke up, confused and without the faintest idea of where she was. She crawled off the bench looking for a clue, and then out of the cabin and onto the deck, standing there dazed in her red Mountie Long Johns as the boat passed by the motel sign. Stood there just in time to see Sam, still in his pajamas, standing barefooted on the dewy grass in front of his parents' cabin, rubbing his eyes, staring at her, waving goodbye. Dave got the license plate number of the pickup from the motel register. Pierre Boisclair. He'd marked his address as Saint-Michel des Saintes. They waited at the cabins all day, Dave getting increasingly agitated. "Why hasn't she phoned?" he asked. By supper, they did the only thing they could think of doing. They drove back home. There were 3 messages on the machine when they got there. The reception on the first was terrible. "For God's sake," it said, "I'm on a boat in the highway and I don't have any clothes. Help me, we're going in." And then the line went dead. "There must have been a cell phone on the boat," said Morley. The second message was clearer. "This isn't amusing, Ray," she said. And then she hung up. The third had come in just before they had arrived home. "All's well that ends well. I'll be back in a few days," and then nothing. Not another word, not another call for 3 days. He considered phoning the police, but what would he tell them? Dorothy returned the night before she was scheduled to fly home. She was sunburnt and happy. "What are you all staring at?" she bellowed after she walked through the door. "I have a phone call to make," she said, and went to the phone, and Dave caught a few words in French. Then he heard her say, "In your dreams, Pierre." The last Dave saw of Dorothy, she was at the airport at the customs table on the far side of the security desk. It was just a glimpse before the frosted security door swung closed. She was standing at the table talking to a cop. RCMP, thought Dave. Her suitcase was open and the policeman was holding up a red serge Mountie jacket that she had bought at the convention. The way the Mountie was holding the red jacket between them made Dave think of a matador at a bullfight. "I wouldn't," he said quietly, "wave that too quickly." He was talking to himself. He was speaking to the cop. Thank you.